This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Ex Secretary Sonny Perdue and U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer announced that China has taken numerous actions to begin implementing its agriculture-related commitments in the Phase 1 trade deal. The countries first entered into the landmark agreement back on Valentine's Day. China's actions toward implementing the deal include signing a protocol that allows the importation of U.S. fresh chipping potatoes. They've lifted the ban on poultry products, and China has lifted restrictions on imports of U.S. pet food that contains ruminant material. They've also updated lists of facilities approved for exporting animal protein, pet food, dairy infant formula, and tallow for industry use to China. The Chinese government has also updated the lists of products that can be exported to China as feed additives. Additionally, China has begun announcing tariff exclusions for imports of U.S. ag products subject to its retaliatory tariffs, and it announced a reduction in retaliatory tariff rates on certain U.S. ag goods. Lighthizer says, quote, "We're already seeing positive results just a month after signing the agreement with China. We will continue to ensure the agreement is strictly enforced for the benefit of our workers, farmers, ranchers, and businesses." The USDA is reminding producers that are still interested in the CRP program that the sign-up deadline is Friday, the 28th. The sign-up is available to farmers and private landowners who are either enrolling for the first time or re-enrolling for another 10 to 15 years. Farmers and ranchers who enroll in the program get a yearly rental payment for voluntarily establishing a long-term resource-conserving plant species, such as an approved grass or tree, which can control soil erosion, improve water quality, and develop wildlife habitat on marginally productive agricultural land. The CRP program has 22 million acres currently enrolled, but the 2018 Farm Bill has lifted that cap to 27 million. The program is marking its 35th anniversary this year with many milestones. It's prevented more than 9 billion tons of soil from eroding. That's enough to fill 600 million dump trucks. And the program has also sequestered an average of 49 million tons of greenhouse gas, equal to taking 9 million cars off of the road. Deere & Company had a surprisingly strong first quarter after an extended period in which the tractor and construction equipment maker was hit hard by the trade dispute between China and the U.S. Quote, "Farmer confidence, though still subdued, has improved due in part of hopes for a relaxation of trade tensions and higher agricultural exports," says CEO John May. An Associated Press report says China has suspended more Putinov tariffs on imports of U.S. industrial goods in response to a truce in the trade war with Washington. It's been well documented how hard Chinese tariffs have hit U.S. agricultural commodities like soybeans, which hurt farmers and in turn hurt farm equipment manufacturers as well. The Moline, Illinois-based Deere & Company had posted three consecutive quarters of falling profit and slowing sales growth as trade tension between China and the U.S. continued. It also stuck to a conservative outlook during this year. Deere expects sales in its agriculture and turf business to fall between 5 and 10%, and those in the construction and forestry segment to fall between 10 and 15%. Back to news from the USDA. They recently released their projection for agriculture here in 2020, and AFBF economist John Newton breaks down those numbers. Chad Smith has more.
After a rough 2019 planting season that saw 20 million acres go unplanted, the USDA outlook projections are calling for a significant bounce back in planted acres. John Newton, chief economist for the American Farm Bureau, says corn and soybean acres are projected to increase, while cotton and wheat acres are expected to decline.
Given an expansion in acreage for both corn and soybeans and a bounce back in yields, is corn and soybean production are both both going to increase in 2020. Wheat production is expected to decline slightly in 2020 on the lower acreage and a slight yield reduction. Cotton production is expected to fall slightly based on a decrease in acreage, but slightly offset by an improvement in yields this year.
Newton says they're looking for exports, especially in soybeans, to bounce back this year.
We're expecting to see exports bounce back a little bit, still below where they were a couple years ago before the trade war started. We're going to see soybean supplies tighten up again. That should lead to higher prices. On the corn side, demand's simply not going to be able to keep up with supply, and thus USDA has corn stocks projected to be at 2.6 billion bushels, a record high, and a slight decrease in the corn price for 2020.
Newton says overall the livestock sector will see higher prices.
USDA is expecting record production just about in all livestock categories. Dairy production expected at 222 billion pounds, but we will see higher milk prices, higher pork prices, higher cattle prices. I think the only sector where there is some weakness is going to be in the broiler space. Lower prices there, but higher prices for eggs and turkey. Then on the same side of the coin, lower feed prices for those folks.
Chad Smith, Washington.
Moving on into other ag news here on your Wednesday morning, we have the state crop progress and condition report. Statewide, the average temperature for the month of February was 30.8 degrees. That's 1.7 degree above normal. Precip for the month has averaged 1.52 inches. That's 6-tenths of an inch below normal. 6-hundredths of an inch, actually, below normal. As of Sunday, topsoil moisture supply was rated at 63% adequate and 37% surplus. Subsoil moisture supply was 73% adequate and 27% surplus. Winter wheat conditions is rated at 2% very poor, 6% poor, 36% fair, 46% good, and 10% excellent. In other state ag news, we have the county estimates for yield that were released back on Friday for both corn and beans. For corn, only 7 counties yielded over 200 bushels, and none were over 210, while in 2018, the whole state averaged over 210 bushels to the acre. The highest county corn yield in Illinois was Sangamon County at 206.3 bushels to the acre, with 45.5 million bushels of corn raised on 224,000 acres in Sangamon County. The other counties in the state with an average over 200 include Cass, Carroll, Macon, McLean, Morgan, Stark, and Tazewell counties. Counties in our WSMI listening area over 200 or under 200 but still had yields were Bond County at 184, Calhoun at 171, Clinton at 182, Christian at 199, Fayette 166, Green 192, Jersey 183.5, Macoupin 183, Madison 198, Montgomery 188, Shelby 175, and St. Clair at 184. And into our last story here on this Wednesday, with February wrapping up at the end of the week, we'd like to recognize that February is Lactose Intolerance Month. Here to talk about lactose intolerance and how dairy food can still fit into your healthy diet is Jill Williams, nutrition educator and registered dietitian with the St. Louis District Dairy Council.
So lactose is a natural sugar. It's found in milk and any foods that are made with milk. And lactose intolerance is a food sensitivity. It's not an allergy or a disease. It results from not having enough lactase, which is the enzyme in our body that actually digests lactose. So the result of this is just being intolerant, having some uncomfortable like stomach side effects when you eat something with lactose.
And as you covered there in that part of the question, lactose intolerance is not the same as a milk allergy. They're two separate things.
Right. It's not the same. A milk allergy is caused by a reaction to the protein in milk. So those people that have a true milk allergy are not able to have any dairy products. So oftentimes those with lactose intolerance think that they're unable to have any dairy products in their diet. And we'll talk about, you know, kind of why that's incorrect.
Can only adults be intolerant to dairy?
Well, intolerance to dairy is less common in children. Of course, it could happen, so be sure to consult with your physician if your child is experiencing side effects. If your child does have lactose intolerance, it's important to get lactose-free milk. So about 1 out of 2 kids ages 9 and up don't get enough calcium, vitamin D, and potassium. So those all are nutrients of public health concern. Milk is the number one food source of these three nutrients, and it also provides other essential nutrients to help kids keep growing strong. So adults may make less lactase over time, which is that enzyme that we need to digest dairy, and that's why lactose intolerance is more common in adults than in children. So, you know, it does kind of maybe get worse over time, or you might just realize that you are lactose intolerant as you get older. So that's why it's more prevalent in adults than children.
I know a few people that have gotten more sensitive to it over time.
And right.
They're about my age, about 25, and sometimes they can barely have dairy. But they said, as a kid, I could drink milk all the time.
Sure,
so
yeah.
It is something that develops over time or could.
Right.
So if people that do experience lactose intolerance, how could they get all the nutrients they need without dairy? Of course, we've always talked that dairy has quite a few of them.
Right.
But if they're missing out on that, how could they find alternative source?
You know, health and nutrition experts recommend individuals with lactose intolerance try and keep dairy in their diet to meet those recommendations of three per day. And we'll talk about that in a minute, how you can still get dairy in your diet if you're lactose intolerant. The dairy food group includes milk, yogurt, and cheese. That provides key nutrients like calcium, potassium, and vitamin D. And it is difficult to get enough of these nutrients if you don't have dairy in your diet.
So how could somebody include dairy in their diet if they are lactose intolerant? Probably mostly moderation.
Right. So you want to start with a small amount of milk daily and increase gradually until you find the amount that works with your tolerance level. So everyone is kind of a little bit different when it comes to that. Solid foods help slow down digestion and allow the body more time to digest lactose. You can try drinking milk with meals or blending it in like a smoothie or adding it to cereal or oatmeal for a like protein-packed breakfast. Cheeses contain really minimal amounts, less than 1 gram of lactose, due to the steps in cheese making and aging. So they don't actually contain as much lactose as milk does. You know, a lot of people that are lactose intolerant can still tolerate cheese. And cheese, you know, pairs really well with all the other food groups, of course. Yogurt has lactose, but it's unique because its live and active cultures help digest the lactose, which can make it easier for people to tolerate. So there's less lactose in Greek yogurt because of the straining process, you know, to create that thick texture that removes some of the lactose. Additionally, it has the live and active cultures. You can also find, you know, lactose-free yogurt as well.
And what are some other lactose-free foods? Of course, we talked that they have milk on the market, and I'm sure they have multiple other sources just besides milk.
Right. So if you can't tolerate regular milk at all, you can also choose lactose-free products like the milk, the yogurt, the ice cream, sour cream, cottage cheese. Those are all available in your local grocery stores. These products contain the same nutritional benefits of dairy. They are still dairy. They still have calcium, potassium, vitamin D. They have great flavor. They just are missing that lactose. So the lactase enzyme that's needed to break down these products during production, therefore the lactase has already been broken down or digested, if you will. And you can substitute these products in your favorite recipes. For example, you can make a fruit and yogurt parfait with lactose-free strawberry yogurt, fresh strawberries and granola, or you can add lactose-free milk to soups, things like that. We have a creamy tomato basil recipe that we're highlighting this month on our recipe, and that uses lactose-free milk in it. So there's also supplements that you can buy. So there's lactase supplements that you can take prior to enjoying dairy foods to eliminate those possible side effects of lactose. I have a friend that's lactose intolerant, but she really loves ice cream. So whenever she goes out for ice cream, she just takes, you know, one of the little lactase supplements. And then that way she, you know, has an easier time digesting it.
And that's what I was going to ask. I saw that on there. I'm like, so it's kind of almost like a vitamin in a way.
It is. You. Yeah, you just take it before you have those dairy products. And that lactase helps to digest that lactose, you know, that's in that product.
And if more people would like some more resources, kind of to research on their own online, of course, you have the website for them to do that.
Yes, our website is stldairycouncil.org. You can find a tip sheet on lactose intolerance over there if you go in our resources materials section. We also have our featured recipes. Like I said, we have two recipes this month. One is a smoothie and one is a soup, and they're both lactose-free. And then we also have our Facebook and our Instagram at STL Dairy Council. If you search for that, you can see kind of what we're doing out in the community and all of our initiatives.
Again, that was Jill Williams with the St. Louis District Dairy Council. And that wraps it up for this Wednesday morning edition of the Ag Show. Reporting for WSMI Ag News, I'm Gabe Osborne.